Well, it's that time again, that wonderful time again, autumn in Chicago, almost, which means the return of our music director of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Maestro Ricardo Muti. And it also means we have a chance to catch up with the maestro at the beginning of the season. And I thought, first, welcome home, in a way. It's one of your
Thank
homes.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you had a busy summer. You were on at least three continents, I think.
Oh, yes. Yes, I worked practically all summer. But with some concerts that were very meaningful, not only normal concerts. Of course, I was in Salzburg now for the 42 times. I started in 1971. To conduct the festival.
So your 42nd year there.
Yes, 42nd year. I did also the things that I would like to underline, to remember with a special affection. Two concerts in Ravenna. One and was an opera, Hindemith Sancta Susanna, on stage with the direction of my daughter, Chiara, that she's an actress, but she knows music very well. She studied with Giorgio Strehler in Milano, so I was
sure. Great stage director.
Stage director. I was sure that she had the talent for theater in music. And for this opera, Sancta Susanna, that is a very complicated opera, especially because the subject is very delicate. So she tried for the first time and was very, very successful, not only with the public, but all the critics, all in Italy, that came to the performance loved her work. That was modern in concept, but not those kind of regie theater that now are very common in Germany, in also in Holland, and many times you see things that have nothing to do with the music.
So, for example, with this opera taking place in a convent, if a director had it take place in a department store or a zoo, she didn't do this.
No. Or Rigoletto in a pub with the mafia and etc. This was a special occasion for me to appreciate the talent of my daughter. I'm not an easy father, so it's not the kind of father that says, oh, my daughter is so fantastic, etc. Actually, I know how difficult is this profession and how difficult is the world of music, theater. So actually, in principle, I would have been against this choice, but she proved to be good, and so I hope that she will continue with success in the future.
I was going to say she must have been rather brave, because you're known for rather direct comments about stage directors.
Si.
And as you say, you're also not giving breaks to people because they are related or something.
No. All my life, I had the fortune, the privilege to work with some great stage directors. As I said, Strehler, Ronconi, Graham Vick, Herzog, etc. But also, I had some disasters with some stage directors that clearly didn't know anything about the what they were doing. Just today it's becoming fashionable that stage directors, they create a story that has nothing to do with the opera itself. The problem is not to be modern or to be
conservative.
Because you can be modern and stupid, that conservative and intelligent, or the other way around. Right. It's today the regie is becoming so number one in an opera, and the fault is sometimes also of the critics, because when it's a new production of an opera, in a big article about the new production, three-quarters of the article is about the nonsense that you see on the stage, and the last short column about the performance. Right. But anyway, this is not the subject of our conversation. Then after that concert, that opera, I did a concert in the series of The Roads of Friendship that we started, as we said last time when we had our conversation last year. We started in Sarajevo many years ago, and we visited many troubled cities. But this year, because of the economical situation in Europe and in Italy also, was difficult to find all the money to go as we did last year. We went to Kenya and to Nairobi and to do a concert that was beautiful with the people of Nairobi. And this year, the concert took place in Ravenna. Mm-hmm. And because the theme of the festival was the La Spiritualità, was a spiritual theme about religions, about faith, all religions. So we put together all the, and so we had, for example, the concert with the Tibetan monks that came and they sang there. It was very impressive to hear sound so deep.
And throat singing and overtones, so overtones and undertones.
with this instrument, this long very deep and dark sounds. And then we had people from Russia, from Orthodox, from Serbia, and even some groups that came from the south of Italy that sang a kind of songs very old, connected with the spiritual themes, or, as I said, not necessarily this religion or that religion,
right,
but was the expression they sang with the words that sometimes I even didn't understand because of the dialect, but had to do with the soul, no, with the mind, the eternity. And it was interesting to hear all together. And I had the Cherubini Orchestra, and we played the Brahms Rhapsody for contralto and male chorus.
Ah, yeah, the Alto Rhapsody.
The Alto Rhapsody, then the Song of Destiny, and I don't remember what else, the Ave Verum. Mm-hmm. And in the end, all the groups of different religions,
yes,
And different countries, they all together, so we are talking about 200 people all together, they sang the Ave Verum.
Mm.
And it's
the Mozart or
Mozart Ave Verum. That I recorded with the Berlin Philharmonic many years ago. I've done so many times, but generally it's done with a small group of the strings and
like
a little chorus.
Motet choir or something.
But to hear the combination of these sounds with the Orthodox Jewish Tibetan monks all together singing Mozart,
yeah,
you realize that Mozart really is God, because belongs
right,
to everybody and works very well for everybody.
Right.
And actually, at the end, I asked, I made a sign during the performance. At the moment of the performance, I made a gesture to the Orthodox priest from Russia to end an octave lower. So this voice of the bassi in the low register,
right,
at Mozart certainly didn't. And because I have the reputation to be a purist, that was an exception, but was a fantastic exception because the result was extremely moving.
Yes.
So after that concert, I went to Calabria, where I conducted and I worked first, and I conducted 1,000 young musicians from the bande, so brass and woodwind instruments.
So these are like these little town and village bands, we would say.
See,
and they all came together
all
from
together,
the region.
And it was so important this that the Italian television asked, the television asked to broadcast the concert, to take the, because I say, you know, generally today music, even in Europe, you see concerts very seldom in television because there is some money, the culture is expensive, you know, all the stories that we know very well. So I went there, and this was a concert where all these kids, young men and women, they got together with their instruments to play together The message was a message against mafia and criminalità, criminality. They wanted to show that music can help to make friends, to become friends and to love each other. In fact, in these groups of hundreds of young musicians, were at the same desk, you could see boys or girls that belonged to families that hated each other since generations and generations. And thanks to the music, they could sit together.
Capuletti and Montecchi sat
together. Capuletti e Montecchi, bravissimo. they sat together and they played together, feeling the same way and embracing themselves at the end of the concert. 1,000.
What was the repertoire?
So I conducted three overtures, because they did also one piece with four different conductors, the conductor that work generally with them. And I conducted the overtures from Nabucco, Forza del Destino, and Norma. And, you know, for example, Il Nomatire, with the strings, it's easy.
Right.
But when you have to do this with the clarinets, with this staccato. And they did very well. And at the end of the concert, I asked everybody to play the national anthem, the Italian national anthem. And so I had in front of me little girls of 8 years old with a saxophone. In the hands or trumpet.
Not as big as a saxophone.
See, the saxophone was bigger than the girl. And in the end, in fact, there are some pictures that have been published. They all put the instruments up in the air. So they showed the instruments like saying, these are our arms, our weapons.
Right. Instead of raising a gun or a fist,
a gun, etc.,
they raised the instrument.
The clarinets or trumpets or trombones, etc., etc. And that was a gesture that was incredible in a region, in a country that is very problematic.
And then after that, you went
back to Ravenna, and I worked with the Cherubini Orchestra, because we went to Cologne in Buenos Aires, and we did four performances of the opera of Mercadante that I did at the Whitsun Festival in Salzburg last year, and then also I did in Ravenna and in Teatro Real in Madrid. So we brought to the Teatro Cologne, where had a huge success, and I was very impressed about the fact that we didn't bring Rigoletto or Traviata or Trovatore, but the theater, that is a huge theater, the Cologne. Cologne is one of the biggest opera houses in the world, was absolutely packed for four performances, and the opera
of an opera that was only recently rediscovered by a composer who was unknown to
Mercadante. They had in the past, in one century, maybe two operas, Il Bravo, maybe Il Giuramento, that is the most famous operas of Mercadante, had a big success, and the young musicians had this wonderful experience in this big theater that is an Italian theater, because practically was made by an Italian architect, Tamburini, but the atmosphere inside is typical of an Italian theater, because the theater was not only made by an Italian architect, but for decades and decades, the Italian companies, the beginning of the 20th century, used to go to South America.
Caruso, Toscanini.
Toscanini, De Sabata, Marinuzzi, Votto, Serafin. Right. They all went there. So you can
I think half the population is Genovese.
See, 45%. They told me that 45% are Italians.
Yeah, and of them, about 90% are from Genoa, I suppose.
I see. Yeah. They followed Cristoforo Colombo.
Exactly, and then they named the theater for him.
So then, before in Salzburg, I did three concerts. the program with the Vienna Philharmonic, where I did the Messa Solennelle of Berlioz.
Not the Requiem, but the early Mass that he wrote.
That I will do here next season, I think. This with the Vienna Philharmonic, and the first part I did two symphonic poems of Liszt. The prelude that I have done here too, but before that, one of his last symphonic poems that I adore, that is From the Cradle to the Grave.
You introduced this piece to me when I heard you play it
with
the New York Philharmonic, and it's a beautiful,
it's a fantastic piece. It's a really
Schubert could have written this.
And it's so deep, and practically the message is exactly like the prelude. And I explained to the Vienna Philharmonic that they didn't need my explanation, but because the finale can sound very how can I say,
pompous,
etc. I said, really, we have to be able to play fortissimo. It's written fortissimo, but should sound still spiritual. If not, we go back to the fact that this theme was used by the Nazi during the Second War to announce to the world that they had a victory here on that. In fact, for many years, this piece was not accepted well by the public, especially the people that had this tremendous experience, because that music brought to memories
the appropriation of that music, not Liszt himself, but that
poor Liszt.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with it. And you're also in Israel.
In Israel, that was, again, a fantastic experience because I love the Israel Philharmonic and they love me. So it's a mutual love and respect. And also, being a Southern Italian in Israel, I feel at home because it's the same atmosphere. The buildings, the color of the sky.
The people talking with their hands.
People is the mama and et cetera, et cetera. You have all these things that. So I feel like I belong to that. I could have been born there.
Right.
So I did the Requiem. And
the
Verdi Requiem, and because the Mann Hall, the big hall of the Vienna, the Israel Philharmonic, is under reconstruction, so we did the concert in a hangar near the port, and there were thousands of people. I did, I think, two or three times the Requiem. Also in that period, I was invited by a great friend, Fiamma Nierenstein, that is it's a fantastic writer and a journalist, Jewish, Italian, Polish, you know.
Right.
So she had written a book about Jerusalem, a very interesting book about Jerusalem. And this was introduced to the press in the Italian Institute of Culture in Tel Aviv.
Okay.
And so I was invited to participate to this introduction of the book. So many things happened during the summer.
And it was an opportunity, it sounds like, in each of these places to make some connection with the culture and with the people, not only to fly in, play the concert, and fly out.
No, certo. As I try to do here. This time, I will go to bring music to prison, where two times I've been in a prison for young girls, and this time I go to prison where only men.
And young men, boys,
young men,
teenagers,
teenagers, and this will be a very great experience for me because to bring music of composers that they have never heard, maybe, and to explain, that will be something that certainly will enrich more me than them. And this time I have invited also a group of the Chicago Symphony, the brass players.
So in a way, a banda.
It's una banda. So to create a sort of more easy bridge between an unknown world.
With the girls, you can play the piano, you can play something light, but with the guys, if you come in there with these amazing brass players. There's a good
they
chance
feel,
there's going
they
to
will
be a
feel
connection.
Immediately something more yeah. familiar.
Yeah. And you're bringing, I think, a wonderful, some wonderful singers. Si. Eric Owens, who si. Was a great si, si. Alberich in the si, si, si. New York Met, and was Hercules. Mm. Here at the Lyric Opera, yeah, just yeah, as a warm
and
person.
I'm glad that he accepted immediately yeah. my invitation.
Even though he's in the midst of an opera, he's flying in
you see,
just to
this,
do this. Yeah. It's really very special.
It's very special.
That the people can see people who are not their stereotype of what would be a fancy opera singer, quote
si, certo,
unquote.
Certo.
And they're going to see yeah. a black guy, a Latin guy, trumpets.
Si.
It's. I'm excited. Si.
It will be wonderful. I mean, at this moment of my life, to conduct a Brahms symphony, a Beethoven symphony, is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough anymore, because, I mean, it's good, but it's more important to try to help people with music that has been the bread of my life,
right.
But now to give back what I received.
One thing that you are conducting now is a work that by its name could confuse some more mature listeners, because it used to be that the New World Symphony of Dvorak was known as the Symphony No. 5 of Dvorak. But you're going to perform the actual
Symphony No. 5,
which used to be No. 1.
See, as you know, it's, in the Dvorak you have the same problem of Schubert.
Yeah.
You, in Schubert there is a chaos. You don't know, the unfinished symphony is number 8. Then the number 7 is the last one, no, but it's in the number 9. This story of the catalogs, it's complicated. In any case, this is the number 5.
Yes.
Is the in F major,
right.
And was dedicated to von Bulow, I think. And it's a beautiful symphony called the Pastorale. Not because the Beethoven Pastorale is in F major in the same key, but has this at the beginning, this kind of atmosphere of landscape. It's a very Middle Europe, you know, very mm-hmm. Czechoslovakia, the theme and the melancholy that is in the music. Actually, I must say that when I was young, I conducted so many times the New World Symphony, and I recorded with the Philharmonia, mm-hmm. that when I hear tam pam 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 pam, I have to really to run away, because I can't.
I think some listeners got to the point too, where you all were playing it all the time too. So this is a chance to re-enter Dvorak, his world, you could say, because it's everyone doesn't know each tune.
No, but it's important, because if not, you know, you are stuck with the same music all the time. You cannot hear Bohème every and ignore so much music.
Right.
But I remember about the New World that when I was started to conduct, I met in Milano a Czech conductor. Now he's dead, so we are talking about 40 years ago. His name was Václav Smetáček. Mm-hmm. It was not famous like Karl Anschel, but a very good conductor. And so he came to a concert where I conducted the New World Symphony. Actually, I was quite nervous, because Smetáček was a very famous conductor in Czechoslovakia. So Dvorak was the composer for them. And in the third movement was tam pam 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 ta 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 ta, and then ta 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 ta, there is this trill. Mm-hmm. And so I used at that time to make the trill not so rich and not so evident, you know. Tam pam 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 trr. And he came after to visit me and said he liked the performance. Maybe he was generous, he was nice, he was kind. But he said, in the future, when is this moment of the trill, tom, prum, pum, prum, trrr, he said, don't make soft. You have to exaggerate, because the idea of this trill came to Dvorak when he was in New York from the pigeons outside his window. And this is
and this then was the pigeon era of your interpretation of this symphony.
But certainly, musically speaking, this symphony is more beautiful than the New World. New World is more the most famous, but not necessarily. Like Mascagni always complained about the fact that he was very famous and very well known because of Cavalleria Rusticana, but he had written so many operas. He said, nobody remembers me because I've written Iris or because of L'Amico Fritz, etc. Everyone says Cavalleria Rusticana. When I met Karl Orff for the Carmina Burana, he said to me, said, Maestro, in future, don't forget that I've done Catulli Carmina, I Trionfi d'Afrodite, etc., etc. Because this, the Carmina Burana, have been my fortune and my also tragedy, because everybody speaks about Carmina Burana and ignores the rest.
You will then take the orchestra somewhere. Amazingly, they have never been, even though it's very, very close by, Mexico.
In Mexico, see, I'm glad to bring the orchestra there. We go to New York first. We open the season
in
Carnegie Hall. And three immediately concerts. After Carnegie Hall, we go to Mexico. I've been in Mexico 4 or 5 years ago, only one time with the Vienna Philharmonic.
Oh, okay.
And
I thought maybe with Philadelphia, but no, only with Vienna Philharmonic.
No, we're not with Philadelphia. With the Vienna Philharmonic, and I played in Monterrey. Mm-hmm. And in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. Actually, Mexico City, not in the theater, in a huge place, because we're 9,000 people.
Oh, kind of an auditorium or something.
Sort of, yeah. In fact, they used some amplification.
Uh-huh.
And I hate when you have to have amplification in a concert.
But this will be in the Palacio Bellas Artes, the Fine Arts.
Belle Arte, sí.
And then you're also going to Guanajuato.
Yeah, I have never been there.
Colonial city. See. I haven't been there yet either. Yeah.
So it's apparently it's very famous because I've heard that many great orchestras go there.
They have the main, what you could say, fine arts festival named Cervantes, which is also interesting because today I don't think in South America you would have a new festival with a Spanish name. It would be somebody coming from Peru or from Mexico.
Sí,
or,
this
is going all the way back to when that Spanish connection was held as a very positive thing, and Cervantes is, of course, the literature
certo.
God. So, sí. But apparently, this is the place where the orchestras come.
So it's very, for me, it's very strange the fact that I just was in South America and I have to go back now.
Well, Mexico's still technically North America, but it is
Latin
America.
Vero. In fact, I remember that when I was in Mexico last time, I could feel some American influence. United mm-hmm. States,
sure.
I mean, influence. But in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, I felt like to be in Napoli or in Barcelona. Yeah. It's really a southern...
There was some British influence in Argentina in the past, and some of the clothing in the past, and drinking tea, but I think today it's probably it's not...
È proprio molto, molto latina.
Sì.
It's yeah. No sign of the influence of the North American.
Right, right. Not a bad thing to have no sign.
I'm a guest in this country, so right. I cannot say.
You understandably have cut back your opera direction to working with the house in Rome in terms of the staged opera. And we spoke last time about the good experience you had redoing Attila after you had difficult experiences with it in New York. What's next for you?
In New York, I had a wonderful experience with the orchestra,
right.
with the chorus, and with
the
technicians. Actually, you know, this is was an example of a mistake that I made because I invited the director, so it was not...
okay. I didn't say you had a problem because of there. I said you had it there.
Okay. It was a strange mise en scène.
But you had worked with Pierre Audi before.
He had done Magic Flute in Salzburg, so I was sure that he would do better. He was caught in the middle of this new tendency, the met to fancy stage directions, mm-hmm. You know, to be modern, because you have to be modern.
Right.
Anyway, in Roma, I will do now this for the Verdi year, three Verdi operas.
Uh-huh.
And so we open in the December with the Simone Boccanegra.
This coming December, yeah.
See, the opening of the season. With Adrian Noble, that is a very famous English director, mm-hmm. Connected with the Shakespeare Theatre.
Right.
And then the second opera will be I Due Foscari, mm-hmm. with la regia di Herzog.
Uh-huh. The film director, Werner Herzog.
Yeah, Werner Herzog. He had he has worked with me already two times in the past in La Scala. One time he did with me La Donna del Lago, Rossini.
Yes.
And the second time he did Fidelio.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful Fidelio.
Right.
A wonderful Fidelio with a great cast of... I think it will be good for I Due Foscari. And then we do the revival of Nabucco, the famous Nabucco, where I made the famous speech to the politicians.
Right.
And then we bring Nabucco with the opera of Roma to Salzburg. So this will be a big thing, because for the first time the Roma Theater is invited to do an opera in Salzburg.
So you're bringing there in your production. You're
see,
not going
but
there
in Salzburg will be done in concert form.
Ah, okay.
Because as I announced to the press 2 years ago, I said now for certain number of years, I don't know how many, I don't want to do operas in Salzburg,
right,
because a new production in Salzburg means to stay in Salzburg almost 2 months.
Right.
And I don't know how many summers I have in front of me in the future. So already I've destroyed so many summers. I mean, no, to be in Salzburg is not, doesn't mean to destroy, but...
Right.
But
as you just explained to us, all these amazing projects and things you were able to do this year, because you weren't doing an opera in Salzburg.
Just, so this year in concert form, so we will be there 10 days maximum, and then... and this is these are the three operas for the Verdier, but in Salzburg also I will do next year in the middle of August three performances of the Verdi Requiem for the Verdi year in Salzburg. See.
Tui Foscari is not performed, not presented with any kind of frequency compared to most of the
but it's a beautiful opera. I did a wonderful production with a wonderful production in La Scala. I mean, for me, I don't consider the Verdi, the minor Verdi, great Verdi. Verdi is Verdi. So starting from the first opera to Falstaff, it's everything is great for me.
Right.
Of course, Falstaff is Falstaff. It's a pinnacle in the history of music. But you will not have Falstaff if you don't start from the beginning.
Sure.
So it's important to perform as much you can all the Verdi operas to understand the process of a composer that practically covers one century.
Right. And where do you see Boccanegra in the overall?
Boccanegra is, of course, this, the second version of Boccanegra with the libretto that was revised by Boito. It's an opera extremely refined. The psychology that Verdi puts in the around the personaggi, it's one of the great operas of Verdi, like Macbeth.
Right.
But these were operas that until a certain years ago were not known at all, because everybody knew the popular operas Traviata, Rigoletto, Trovatore, and then Otello, even Falstaff now is you cannot consider so popular, but it's the masterpiece of Verdi. And
who is cast in the title role for Boccanegra in Rome?
There are all new singers that I have discovered, because you cannot go on with the usual. I mean, there are some one or two all the Italian baritones that are very famous, but, you know, they are 74, 75 years old. I mean, it's fantastic that they can still sing, but we have to think also to the future, and so we have to create a new...
And that's a part of your mission in Rome.
Also,
I mean, in general, of course, but one of the abilities you have there is that you can bring these people in.
Antonenko, for example, in Otello, he is making a fantastic career today. Big success at the Met, in Covent Garden, in Vienna. But he made his debut with me in Salzburg with Otello, and at the first time that he sang, not everybody understood how great singer he is. I had prepared for 2 years the role of Otello for him. He came to Ravenna or to other places to work with me in 2 years' time. Mm-hmm. Every 3 months he came, we worked, etc., etc., and then he made this. Today is the best Otello that you remember.
Yes.
He sang, there is no one, no other Otello like Antonenko. Like for Falstaff, I created Maestri. Maestri is the best Falstaff today, without any doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the missions is to create new singers.
Right.
Like the Mercadante this year, or in the past 5 years, all the operas that I've done in Salzburg for the Whitsun Festival, all young singers.
Right. It's been a while since there's been some change in Italy, in government and direction. And you also have had the, I'm going to be a bit ironic here, the good fortune that Greece and Spain have taken over the news. So there has been less news for people outside of Italy. How are things going now in Italy in terms of support of culture, in terms of dignity?
I don't understand very much about politics, and I understand even less about economy. So we have now Monti, our prime minister, that is a very respected economist, is a professor of university, is a very, very dignified person, and is working very hard to bring Italy out of the difficult economical situation. And with all the problems that Europe has, and little by little I think that he will succeed. But the economical situation is difficult. It's not like a disaster like Greece or like Spain. Because the Italians always find a way to not to sink in the water. So,
right.
So we are optimist, not desperate, but a little bit worried about the fact that we have to pay more and more taxes, all the Italians. But we will see in the future. Certainly in a situation like this, culture suffers. But the situation today is not worse than the last year. Or theater still go on. And in fact, for example, in Roma, I do, of three productions, two productions are completely new. Simone Boccanegra and Foscari. That means that actually the theater in Roma has closed the season in deficit, but active.
With a surplus.
With a surplus. Yeah. So not worse than than before. Certainly, we have always to put the accent on the fact that culture is indispensable. It's the sign of the 1,000 young musicians in Calabria, in a country, in a region that is difficult and also not rich, is not Lombardia, is not Veneto. These are the rich regions in Italy. Calabria, like Sicily, Puglia, they have less possibilities, but still, through music, we can succeed.
Well, whether he is performing in Rome or in Calabria or in Kenya or Beirut or Sarajevo or the, I don't know what they call it now. When I was growing up, they always, the teachers would threaten you, you keep that up and we're sending you to the Audi home. And you remember that, Eric? Now I think it has some name like the Illinois Youth Juvenile Detention Center or something like that. But whether it's there or at Orchestra Hall or in Millennium Park, I think the mission of Riccardo Muti has been to make music at, of course, the highest level, but also to cause us not only to listen, but to hear and to really take in what art can do, art that comes from music in the case of your work, and the possibility that we won't sink and that that maybe we can somehow work together.
I am more and more convinced, I was convinced, but even more now, that not because I'm a musician, but I really believe, because I experimented directly, the fact that music is one of the most important weapons that, that we have to communicate through different with different countries, different cultures, different religions, different philosophies. Music is above everything, speaks to the heart. this phrase can sound very rhetorical, you know, the usual, the heart. But we have a heart, and music can touch the hearts of people and cancel all the barriers that still make people enemies and help to become more friendly.
Well, I know I'm going to hold in my mind's eye, and I imagine that the listener will as well, this image of 1,000 young people holding their instruments in the air, saying, this is what speaks from our heart and to our heart. Grazie.
Prego, grazie a se.
Thank you. music that we heard tonight, old favorites of our guest, Ricardo Muti, music that he presented for his first subscription concerts of this season here in Chicago, and that he is taking on tour this week to Carnegie Hall in New York City, and some of them show up as well, I think. If not, they're still in mind next week in Guanajuato, Mexico, at the Cervantes Festival, and in Mexico City at the Palace of Fine Arts, Palacio de Bellas Artes. They were, in mid-program, Giuseppe Martucci's Notturno, the Opus 70, number one, written at the turn of the last century, first as a piano solo and then as an orchestral work. Muti there leading the Scala Orchestra 20 years ago exactly, October of 1992, recorded at the Teatro Abanella in Milan for Sony Classical. And then we just heard Lotobratta, the October Festival of the Roman Festivals from 1928, of Ottorino Respighi, the teacher of Nino Rota, the teacher of Ricardo Muti. The Philadelphia Orchestra recorded at Fairmount Park 27 years ago, 1985, for an EMI release. Our interview was recorded Wednesday evening, September 19th, in the basement of Orchestra Hall. Errico Arunasso, Eric Arunas, was our recording engineer, as he so often is with Maestro Muti. Matt DeStefano, our producing engineer and producer, as he always is back here in the studio. We'd like to thank Rochelle Rowe and Emily Master for helping to arrange our regular conversations with Ricardo Muti. We'd like to thank our funders, Alphawood Foundation, Dick and Susie Kiphart, and other friends of this program. We'd like to thank you for listening. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. Drop us a line at rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P at AOL.com, or click on the Chime In feature at WFMT.com. And at WFMT.com/critical thinking, you can hear this or any of our other programs again and again on the always free Critical Thinking podcast. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.